Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and let's talk now about a Massachusetts story that's making national headlines. And it has to do with a plan to create a timber rattlesnake colony on an off-limits island in the Quabbin Reservoir. Now, the timber rattler has been severely endangered for some time, but it has a long history in New England. It's the snake on the 1775 Don't Tread on Me Gadsden flag. Nevertheless, some residents who live near the Quabbin are rattled by the idea.
It's inevitable that somebody is going to be bitten by a snake, and that is going to be the end of my use of the watershed. They'll close it down.
I'm not happy having poisonous snakes put in there because I live close enough to it. Within a day's time, one of those snakes could appear in my backyard.
That's Mike Krunkelvich and Irene Butler, residents of Orange. They're speaking last night at a public meeting about the plan to put the timber rattler on an island in the Quabbin Reservoir. And we'd love to know what you think. Do you think the plan for the endangered timber rattlesnakes is a good one? Let us know at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Or are you worried, like Mike and Irene are, that there could be some unintended consequences? So joining us now in the studio with more on this is David Boeri. He's WBUR senior reporter. He's been covering this story and was at the public meeting last night in Orange. Hi there, David.
Hi, Magda.
It's good to have you, David. Also with us is Jeff Corwin. He's a wildlife biologist and host of ABC's Ocean Mysteries, I should say. His latest film is Galapagos Nature's Wonderland, and it's now showing at the New England Aquarium. Jeff, great to have you.
Delighted to be here.
Okay, so first of all, let me get a sense from both of you about the timber rattler itself, the timber rattlesnake itself. Tell me a little bit about how it's endangered, what it's like, why it's important for the Massachusetts ecosystem. Jeff, let's start with you.
Well, for me, it is an iconic species of snake. And unfortunately, as you said, they are critically endangered. The population now in Massachusetts is down to a precious few hundred individual snakes. And they are incredible snakes. Of course, they are a venomous snake, but the venom that they use is primarily there to immobilize their prey. They're very secretive. They're an animal that likes to hide and not come across people. Really a big part of our heritage, a very special species of snake, and we're about to lose it.
And these snakes, historically, they took up a great area of New England. Something happened with the populations, though. After the Ice Age, they were pretty much cut off in various colonies.
Yeah.
They do not travel very far, and they're dependent on the site where they hibernate. So these populations have all been kind of cut off. And yet, there they are. They're there to be found, and believe me, when you find one, it's pretty exciting.
I can only imagine.
There is this sense that they still bring the magic and the mystery of the wild to New England.
Yeah.
To think that they're there.
Well, and David, a little earlier today, and Jeff, jump in here. We were talking about sort of the ecology or the biology of the timber rattlesnake itself. You were saying that how it they don't reproduce until a certain age, and then they don't reproduce for every year. So
yeah, what's made their survival even more difficult is the fact that females do not start reproducing until they're at least seven, maybe 9 years old and longer. And then they only reproduce every 3 to 5 years. So the net recruitment is pretty small on the population.
Well, Jeff, so the idea here, the plan is to put some of these snakes on an island in the Quabbin. I mean, so it's in the middle of the reservoir called Mount Zion. And you've been, or actually, David, you've been there. But first of all, tell us what.
Jeff,
have you been there too?
I've not been there.
Okay. But yeah, tell us what you think about the plan overall. I mean, is it the right way to help preserve this species?
Well, desperate times require desperate measures. And this is a species that's literally dangling on the precipice of extinction. And if we lose this species, it's a tremendous loss to our local natural heritage. So the idea is that this is an isolated island. The this is a place where they don't have to deal with human animal conflict and where they have the opportunity to reproduce. But as David alluded to, their reproduction window is incredibly long. They basically base their survival on being long lived. Mm. So they don't reach sexual maturity until they're between 5 and 10 years in age. But if we're going to save this species, we really have to recognize its value both culturally and biologically and do everything we can to save it. They are uniquely, people don't realize, rattlesnakes are uniquely American snakes. They evolved here. You're looking at a living link to the Ice Age.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why they have rattles is to keep big Pleistocene creatures like mammoth and bison from stepping on them. And they're a reminder of our past, but they also remind us of our current conservation challenges in the present.
So practically what they're going to do is they're going to take 3 females, 2 males, they're going to bring them to Roger Williams Zoo down in Rhode Island, and they will breed them there. Typically, rattlesnakes have 6 to 12 eggs, and so they'll take the young. Because they're in this artificial situation, the survival rate of the young will be much higher, and then they're going to put them back at this refugium, and that's what Mount Zion in Petersham has become, is this refugium. They'll put them there, but Tom French, who is doing this, and he's very successfully restored peregrine falcon populations, turtle populations in the state. What he's going to do is he's going to put radio chips, microchips in each one, because he knows he has to assure everyone that they're going to be tabs on them. Now, they don't travel. A pregnant female will not travel anything more than 1.5 miles. A male at most would travel 4 miles, but he's going to have them collared just in case they take off. They're going to haul them back.
Well, so let's talk about that, because the tape we played at the beginning of the segment here from that public meeting, David, that you attended, I mean, it gets right to the heart of the controversy here, is that there's still a lot of fear. I mean, I take your point. They're going to tag them and track them. But we heard Mike Krunkelvich and Irene Butler, both of them say it's inevitable. Someone's going to get bitten. They're going to show up in my backyard.
Well, somebody's going to die. And it's inevitable. One of these centuries.
Well, that's the point. I mean, the reality is that there's not one example of someone being bitten in a wild situation by a rattlesnake in New England.
In New England,
In other parts of the country where venomous snakes live, where they're more common, we've had situations. But in New England, in Massachusetts, we have no example. The only time people have ever been bitten by rattlesnakes is when they've had them as illegal pets in captivity. So there really isn't a genuine danger of being bitten by one of these animals. But there is a tremendous danger that we're going to lose an important part of our wild legacy.
Well, this is what was on display last night, which was really striking. By the way, the word for the day, ophidiophobia.
Ophidiophobia.
Ophidiophobia was
which
on
I can
display.
Cure.
But you generally, you have this sense, people ask questions, what are we going to do? There are going to be venomous snakes swimming in the drinking supply. Surely it's inevitable.
Do they swim?
They can swim.
They do. But you know what? There's really no reason for them to swim. They got the place. They hibernate. They stay close to the area of where they hibernate. If in fact they swim off, they're not. And they don't. It's the fall. They're not going to get back. They'll die. So they do swim. But Tom French was telling people there is no reason. There's absolutely no reason to fear these snakes.
Well, David and Jeff, hang in here for just a minute, because the people of Massachusetts want to talk about the timber rattlesnake. So let's get them in here. Alex is calling from Medford. You're on the air, Alex.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
What's your thought?
I have 2 points that I wanted to bring up, and the first one is, you know, I just want to be real brief. I have run into rattlesnakes in the wild when I was out hiking in New York. Very easily avoidable, because they are very afraid of you. They are very loud snakes. And, you know, I was walking with my dog, and he was even freaked out, and he ran right away. I gave them their space, and they did not come after me. So it was something that was very low impact when I did actually run into them. And then my second point is, you know, that they're looking for a place, that is, the snakes are looking for a place to call home. And, you know, the biggest problem in their life is us. So if we can give them a place where they are by themselves, that is the solution. And, you know, the problem is that there aren't enough of these snakes.
Right.
So we have to take responsibility and we kind of have to give them their space and not worry about them coming into our space where, you know, they can't live.
Alex, thank you so much for your call. Let's take another thought on another call on that point here. Mark is calling from Melrose. You're on the air, Mark.
Hi. Yeah, I'd just like to expand on that last caller's point in that, you know, historically speaking, this is not so much our space as it is theirs. They've been around for longer. And I was hearing about the reasons for their extirpation with the, you know, glaciation kind of splitting the populations apart. And that's one part of it. But the larger part of it is that we actively went out and killed these things by the hundreds. We used to set dens on fire. I mean, colonial settlers and people moving forward, you know, we actively searched these things out and killed them.
And then that should be part of the discussion.
Like a nice restitution.
Yeah. Mark, thank you so much for your call. David and Jeff, jump in here.
Well, it's interesting because of the 200 rattlesnakes that are in the wild now. Almost all of them have microchips and little batteries in them. They've been tagged and followed. And what that tells the wildlife researchers, they get out there. The biggest population is in Blue Hills here. They find they've been hit by cars, and they find a number of snakes with no heads. Mm. So it's clearly they're getting hit by cars in urban areas where they're crossing roads, and people are coming across them, and they're killing them.
So, Jeff, go ahead.
Well, one of the biggest challenges with protecting this species is that they are the ultimate creature of habit. They like and are connected to the places where they live. So one of the greatest challenges we face is that you can't just take a population and just move them. The mission and the journey to try to establish this population on this remote island refugia in the Quabbin is going to be incredibly lengthy, because if you just take an adult rattlesnake and move them from point A to point B, it could be 10 miles. It could be 100 miles. He will naturally navigate to point A, and most likely he'll find harm's way as he tries to get home. So that's one of the biggest challenges. And as the caller alluded to, we still even persecute these species today. We have found examples where people have killed them or collected them in Massachusetts and New England. And I could take you in spring to a rattlesnake roundup in Texas where thousands of these snakes will be killed. And as they drive them out of their dens with piped in gas and fumes, they kill all the other creatures that depend upon these animals when they share their hibernation shelters.
Yeah. David, you know, thinking about what Jeff said, you and I have had a lot of conversations about New England history over the years, and we started off by mentioning that this is the snake that's on the 1775 Gadsden flag, and it just makes me think, like, what a complex relationship we as a region have had with this animal. I mean, it stood up to be the symbol of, you know, our resistance to to the British Empire, but on the other hand, at the very same time, we were persecuting it. I mean,
that's right. And one of the questions that was asked is, why do rattlesnakes exist? What good do they do the universe? It's the big question. Why did God create rattlesnakes? To which, you know, one can ask, why did God create people? And it's the situation. Here are these. You know, a good year for a rattlesnake in terms of dining is four chipmunks and a white-footed mouse. That's it. It's in heaven. It's happy. That's its entire year. That's all they consume. A typical rattlesnake
the
consumes
slow metabolizers.
Right. Yeah,
and I think it's also important to note that when it comes to conservation, you can't be selective with species. Nature doesn't value a bald eagle over a rattlesnake. Every species has its place. And if we truly want to leave a legacy of great wild spaces and wild creatures, we need to ensure that the ecosystems where they live are intact, and that these species, like the imperiled rattlesnake, have a fighting chance for survival. Because at the end, it's our children that pay the price, because they lose access to this incredible resource.
Courtney is calling from Gloucester. You're on the air, Courtney.
Hi. I totally understand people's fear about dealing with the unknown, and to us, the rattlesnake is unknown in New England. I'm actually from a chaparral environment and know sort of where and how to avoid the rattlesnake. I'm wondering if they prey upon animals that may actually cause more harm to humans than they do, like, for instance, the deer mouse the tick scares me more than the rattlesnake.
Yeah, good.
They contribute to the ecosystem that way.
Excellent question, Courtney. And I'll, honestly, I was thinking when it comes to perils in the New England wild, absolutely. The ticks scare me more than the snakes. But Jeff, I mean, answer Courtney's question.
Well, these are animals. They have really an amazing adaptation to find their prey. If you look right above their nostril, you can see this little pit. And it actually can detect the heat radiating from a mouse or from a bird. So they primarily focus in on small mammals, small warm-blooded creatures like birds, but they will occasionally eat frogs and reptiles and amphibians. But for the most part, they have small meals with small metabolisms, grow very, very slowly. They basically only shed their skin once every year and a half, 2 years. And when they do, that's when they get that brand new little button that they add to their rattler.
But they actually are able, it's very sophisticated. They can actually size up the prey using that sensory fact. They can size up the prey as to whether it's too large to attack or not, and then withdraw. But they will follow it afterwards and kill it, swallow it.
David, last question for you. There's so many things going on here that are very particular to Massachusetts, and I wonder if you are living in Central Mass, and you live there, right?
I live a couple miles from Rattlesnake.
I want to give the folks there the benefit of the doubt. Some of them are probably thinking, hey, Boston, get off our back. You're not the ones who are going to have to live with this snake. You know what I mean? Like the existence of the Quabbin, to begin with, and now we have, once again, the state saying, you're going to do this and you don't have a choice.
Well, remember, there were four towns that were flooded. They were by big government that came in and decided all those people are moving out. So there is this historical anger. On the other hand, go back to that motto, don't tread on me. This is the pioneer days where people were tall, rugged individuals. They stood up to this and they said, bring it on. Now it seems like we're living in a fraidy cat nation. And so this is the story of the rattlesnake. They have a chance to bring it back. It's there. And I think a lot of people are embracing it. God save the Commonwealth.
Well, that's WBUR senior reporter David Boeri. David, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And Jeff Corwin, wildlife biologist and host of ABC's Ocean Mysteries. His latest film, Galapagos Nature's Wonderland, is now showing at the New England Aquarium. Thank you so much for coming in.
I enjoyed it.
And listeners, let us know what you think about the idea regarding the timber rattlesnake in the Quabbin. We're at radioboston.org. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.